It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it certainly is relatively nice outside. 53 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing northwest winds at 6 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for isolated showers this afternoon with cloudy skies, high near 58, west winds to 15. Rain's likely tonight too, at least until 1 in the morning, followed by showers. But for tomorrow, scattered showers are going to make way for partly sunny skies with a high near 63. Coming up on the Midday Report, a local food hub has sprouted on Kodiak Island. Senator Dan Sullivan's trying to close a loophole by which the U.S. ends up buying millions of dollars worth of Russian seafood. And Sitka's Mount Edgecombe volcano, is it going to erupt or what? Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Justice Department has released a damning report on bias and excessive force by police in Minneapolis. NPR's Martin Costi says it's a first step toward a federal reform plan for the city's police department.
The DOJ has been investigating the Minneapolis Police Department for 2 years, and it says it's found patterns of civil rights abuses and misconduct that laid the groundwork for the killing of George Floyd in 2020. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the Minneapolis police have had a pattern of excessive force, racial bias, suppression of free speech, and discrimination against people with behavioral disabilities.
Such conduct is deeply disturbing, and it erodes the community's trust in law enforcement.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey welcomed the DOJ's report, and the city has agreed in principle to negotiate a federal consent decree. That's a court-supervised reform plan for the department. Martin Costi, NPR News.
A 50-year-old man's been convicted of the Pittsburgh synagogue mass shooting that killed 11 people and wounded 6 others. Today, jurors found Robert Bowers guilty of all 63 counts against him for the 2018 massacre. Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg has died. More than half a century ago, the former military analyst leaked massive amounts of documents that detail U.S. actions during the Vietnam War and altered the course of history. On June 13, 1971, the New York Times' first story based on details of the decades-long classified study disclosed to readers that the war was about maintaining the power, influence, and prestige of the United States, not saving the Vietnamese people from communism. Ellsberg reflected on his actions during a 2002 interview with NPR.
The lesson I would draw from Pentagon Papers and from Vietnam altogether is the importance of democracy, of an informed public, and that means some people taking risks with their careers to inform them.
Ellsberg died today at his home in Kensington, California. He was 92 years old. Beijing is dismissing accusations that Chinese government-linked hackers were responsible for a spate of attacks on government agencies and private entities around the world. The U.S. cybersecurity firm Mandiant says it has high confidence that a newly identified hacker network it uncovered was conducting espionage for China. More from NPR's John Ruwitch.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin says the accusation is far-fetched and unprofessional. Wang says American cybersecurity companies have become mere accomplices in the U.S. government's efforts to smear other countries, and he accused the U.S. government of carrying out its own hacking attacks. Mandiant's report was published on Thursday, just before Secretary of State Antony Blinken was slated to begin a high-profile visit to Beijing. The trip was postponed in February after a Chinese balloon flew over the United States, pushing already tense relations between the two countries to a new low. John Ruwitch, NPR News.
The Dow's closed down more than 100 points to end the day at 34,299. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, this is Terry Haynes. A local food hub has sprouted on Kodiak Island. The archipelago is now home to 5 community and tribally owned farms, with plans for a 6th agricultural site this summer. The idea is to connect the island through locally grown food. And as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, the island could be a model of food security for other parts of rural Alaska.
You might not realize that a full-fledged farm has popped up just outside downtown Kodiak, even if you walked right by it.
Right now, it's really lettuce and various herbs.
Max Lyons is the project and marketing coordinator for the Kodiak Archipelago Leadership Institute. He's standing in an L-shaped set of turquoise Connex buildings called Malik Farms. They sit in a parking lot outside the native village of Afognak's administrative offices. The buildings are small, each measuring just about 40 feet long, but nearly 2,000 plants can grow here in hydroponic cabinets. Each baby lettuce head looks like it bloomed from a bright white shell filled with water.
He is just feeding the local communities first and foremost, year-round. So that's why the hydroponics has been a game-changer, because all year you can have, you know, fresh greens at least.
Malik is co-owned by Afognak and the native village of Dinicnak, which is the tribe on Woody Island, right across the channel from Kodiak. Right now, anyone in town can sign up for weekly fresh bags of greens and, depending on availability, have them delivered to their front doors. Tribal elders get first priority. Malik currently serves about 100 households a week. It's a lot of work. Becky Gomez is the hydroponic trainee at Malik Farms.
Monday is usually prepping for harvest, which is Tuesday. Wednesday, we're prepping for deliveries, and then we set out for deliveries, usually about a couple of hours per afternoon. And then Thursday, the same thing again, and then just planning ahead for the following week.
Malik is just the newest farm on the island. There are 5 farms total across the archipelago that make up the Aleutic-grown network. And new hydroponic growing units are being built in the village of Akiak this summer. Almost all of the island's food is brought in from somewhere else. Lyon says the ultimate goal of the farming network is to change that.
Once the villages are producing more than they can consume, they'll send it into Kodiak. So that's where we have that outlet of the food hub.
Eventually, excess produce will be shipped out to other parts of the island as part of the Kiktuk Food Hub. Kiktuk means Kodiak Island in Aleutic. The project started back in 2015 and was seeded with federal grants. The farms are all community or tribally owned and slightly different. Joe Kewin is the agricultural specialist for the native village of Port Lyons on the northeast corner of the island. He started working on the Port Lyons farm back in 2016.
There's cauliflower, broccoli. We pretty much grow any types of vegetables. This year, I'm experimenting with asparagus and artichokes.
Kewin manages 2 acres in Port Lyons, including hoop houses and a chicken coop with 60 hens for laying eggs. He's even planting fruit trees this year. There's also 3 Connex buildings where lettuce and greens grow hydroponically, just like in Kodiak. Residents can pick up whatever's ready to harvest from a farmer's market twice a week. Port Lyons was established as a home for people displaced when the tsunami and earthquake destroyed the native village of Afognak back in 1964. Kewin says those roots helped spark the idea for the farms and food hub.
Back in the Afognak village, there used to be farms and gardens. And so why don't we have farms around this island and in the villages for food security?
But Kewin, who was born and raised in Port Lyons, says the whole thing also goes beyond food security. The farm has given him a reason to stay there. He's hoping it does the same for others.
We want to keep this village going as long as we can. And I see that with this farm. I see this farm expanding as it gets bigger. Our tribe has plans to open a store again and get a store over here for our people.
Back in Kodiak, Lyon says they're still scaling up so they can feed more people each week. It's going to take some time. But he's excited to watch it grow. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Senator Dan Sullivan says he's trying to close a loophole in the U.S. ban on importing seafood from Russia.
There has been a huge loophole where the Russians have been now sending their fish, it's pollock, it's salmon, a little bit less crab, to other countries for reprocessing, primarily China.
President Joe Biden signed an import ban on Russian seafood last year, saying it would help ensure that Americans weren't indirectly financing Russia's war on Ukraine through their purchases. but the United States doesn't require that seafood imports be traced to their country of origin, so millions of dollars of Russian fish go to China and then are exported to the United States. Last year, the U.S. imported more than $300 million worth of salmon and pollock from China. Some of it was caught in the U.S. and sent to China for processing, but a majority is likely to be from Russia, according to an International Trade Commission report. Sullivan told reporters on Thursday that he's talking to officials in the Biden administration about closing that loophole and is also sponsoring legislation, as he did last year.
Bottom line, what this does is it bans all Russian origin fish wherever it goes to be reprocessed. Again, primarily China. We think this is a really big deal for our country to nail the Russians as they're trying to evade sanctions after the brutal invasion of Ukraine.
Environmental groups and the American pollock industry are among those calling for the loophole to be closed. But U.S. companies that process and sell imported fish oppose bans that could limit their supply. Sitka's Mount Edgecumbe volcano is coming under closer scrutiny this summer as research teams follow up on the earthquake swarm which occurred under the mountain in the spring of last year, and satellite data that show the flanks of the peak steadily inflating since about 2018. While no eruption is imminent, scientists from the Alaska Geophysical Institute in Fairbanks recently spent a few days on the flanks of the crater and on the surrounding beaches, collecting information they hope will shed light on what's brewing beneath the surface.
Don't you let go!
You've probably seen it a few times. Gollum and the One Ring have plunged into the lava river at the bottom of Mount Doom, and Samwise is trying to pull Frodo back before he suffers the same fate. Luckily, hobbits have a body chemistry more favorable to heroics inside a volcano. If it had been Aragorn or any of the other human characters in Lord of the Rings helping to destroy the ring, they might have been long gone, passed out in the high concentration of carbon dioxide gas produced in this environment. CO2 can't be smelled or seen, but a team of scientists from the Alaska Geophysical Institute knows how to detect it. Six of them spent a few days helicoptering between Sitka and Mount Edgecumbe in early June, testing the soil of Kruzoff Island for CO2. I caught up with them at the Sitka airport, waiting for a break in the weather.
So today, hopefully, the weather is looking good, so we're hoping to make it to the summit of Edgecumbe today. And we're hoping to measure diffuse CO2, those same CO2 measurements we've been taking along the flanks of the volcano. If we could get inside the crater, we'd like to take some measurements there. However, it's unclear if it's snow-free right now.
Claire Puglio is a doctoral student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks under research assistant professor Tarsilo Girona. Girona has a theory that low-temperature thermal anomalies detected by satellite data suggest increased activity in magma that may be a precursor to an eruption. The same CO2 that would make a volcano inhospitable to Aragorn could possibly be warming the flanks of Mount Edgecumbe.
One of the hypotheses we have to understand those signals is that the gas that is moving from the magma source to the surface is producing this warming in the surface.
Girona and Puglio are two of the six members of the team from the Alaska Geophysical Institute studying gas emissions on Mount Edgecumbe. The project is funded by NASA as part of a program for early career scientists. They're tackling the problem on two fronts, in the air and on the land, or better said, in the land. Carlo Cardellini is from the University of Perugia in Italy. He's helped develop the method for collecting gas from the soil using a device called an accumulation chamber. But he's got a slightly more flavorful metaphor.
And we place a chamber on the top of the soil. It's like a cooking pot. And we leave the concentration of carbon dioxide increase inside the chamber. And the rate of increasing is something that is linked to the amount of gas that is passing from the soil to the atmosphere. So we are catching this increase and we can compute how much gas is escaping from the soil.
Cardellini uses an infrared sensor that continuously measures the concentration of CO2 in the cooking pot, if you will. But he also collects samples to take back and study in the lab. CO2 produced by magma will have a different isotopic signature than CO2 produced by organic decomposition. And there is a lot of organic decomposition on the slopes of Mount Edgecombe, which are primarily wetlands. For the bigger picture, you've got to be airborne. Taryn Lopez is a volcanologist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory. While the others are sampling the slopes of the crater, she'll be overhead doing what is called a gas flight.
Some gases exsolve, which means they form bubbles really deep, such as CO2, where things like water and SO2, which are common volcanic gases, exsolve very shallow. What we're looking for is the composition of the gases. If we see gases and if we see the composition, we can tell if the magma is deep or shallow.
This is the first morning of several that the team has been in Sitka, that the rim of the Mount Edgecombe crater is visible 3,200 feet above Sitka Sound, and the helicopter pilot is ready to fly. Tarsilo Girona tells me that all the data and information collected by the Geophysical Institute team will be published in several papers and shared with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, which is sending its own team to Mount Edgecombe later this summer. And hopefully, Girona said, we can better understand how the volcano works. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Many municipalities and schools in Alaska are facing record high property insurance rates for the year ahead. And as KFSK's Thomas Copeland reports, climate-driven catastrophes across the U.S. are driving up prices right here in Alaska.
Clerk, call the roll.
This was the moment it happened.
Bob.
Yes.
David.
Yes.
A last-second amendment to the Petersburg Borough's 2024 budget.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
The amendment passed unanimously after just about 2 minutes of discussion during last week's assembly meeting. An additional $50,000 for property insurance. Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht says it's the biggest rate increase he's ever seen.
We basically budgeted for a 10% increase. We ended up with over a 30% increase. It's the highest we've seen year over year, for sure. And we don't really know when it's going to end.
Petersburg schools are dealing with a similar problem. Their property insurance is likely to rise by more than 50% for the upcoming fiscal year. Like a lot of small and medium public entities in Alaska, Petersburg Borough and school districts get their coverage through an insurance pool. Both belong to a pool called Alaska Public Entity Insurance, or APEI. Barbara Thurston is the director of APEI. Like Giesbrecht, she says this year's rates are an all-time career high.
I've been with APEI for more than 13 years, and the 30% rate increase we're seeing this year is the largest by a significant amount.
Thurston says that there are two main reasons for the record high rates of property insurance this year. The first is inflation, the cost of labor, materials, and fuel all going up. And the second reason, climate-driven catastrophes.
There's been some significant hurricanes, both in Florida and some other states, that caused a substantial amount of damage. There's been freezes in Texas, which are relatively unheard of, but were very expensive. And there's been a lot of wildfires.
Insurance pools like APEI buy their own reinsurance from national or global insurers like AIG or Lloyd's of London. As climate-driven disasters become more frequent across the US, the big insurers have to foot the bill. Dr. Rachel Cletus is the policy director at the Union of Concerned Scientists.
The rising insurance rates are a canary in a coal mine for climate change. What they're pointing out is many places are now becoming so highly exposed to climate risk that insurance is becoming unaffordable or unavailable.
In the past 5 years, insured losses from these catastrophes have averaged about $100 billion globally, and nearly three-quarters of those losses occurred in North America. Cletus says that big insurers basically have two options: jack up their prices or abandon ship.
Recent news that State Farm and Allstate were going to stop offering new homeowner insurance policies in California are very much related to the increase in catastrophic wildfire seasons.
But according to Cletus, it's not just Californian homeowners who need to be worried.
Public entities also purchase insurance to protect the value of infrastructure, of major buildings, etc. And if insurance rates go up in these cases, ultimately it's the taxpayer that's on the hook for these higher rates.
And these catastrophes aren't some faraway problem for Alaskans. Landslides and flooding could be on the rise in Southeast. Aaron Jacobs is a hydrologist with NOAA.
We are seeing temperature and precipitation increase throughout these 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years on the climate record. And extreme precipitation are the triggering events that can increase risk for landslides and flooding.
Insurance companies are now looking to experts like Jacobs to help them predict future catastrophes. Last month, NOAA teamed up with the National Science Foundation to launch a new research center that will provide the insurance industry with climate change data. And back in Petersburg, borough manager Steve Giesbrecht says he wants to be prepared too.
I think this is a new era in the cost of property insurance. We're going to have to factor that in every year and take that into account when we set those numbers in our budget.
The fiscal year for Alaskan public entities like Petersburg Borough and School District kicks off on July 1st. But high rates of property insurance could last for years to come. In Petersburg, I'm Thomas Copeland.
A pair of hacking attacks is targeting companies and government agencies. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The bigger attack may have come from a Chinese state-backed group which spied on hundreds of networks around the world using an email security flaw. A third of the hacked networks belong to government agencies. Meanwhile, another hack is being attributed to a Russian ransomware group. It is thought to have breached networks at the U.S. Department of Energy, transportation agencies in Oregon and Louisiana, as well as other state and federal agencies. The Biden administration is releasing nearly $1 billion in grants to bring internet access to remote and rural areas of the country, including in Alaska and Texas. The money comes from the infrastructure law enacted in 2021. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
KMXT is supported in part by First National Bank Alaska, celebrating its 60th anniversary serving Kodiak by giving away weekly prizes through July 14th. A grand prize of 60,000 Alaska Airlines miles will be awarded on Friday, July 14, at the Customer Appreciation Anniversary event at the Kodiak Branch from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The event is open to all. More information is available at fnbalaska.com/Kodiak60. Member FDIC.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 16th day of June, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:07. It will set again at 11:13, giving us 18 hours and 5 minutes of glorious daylight. A gain of 46 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 78 degrees, set in 1986 and 2002. Our record low is 36, set in 1996 and 2017. Currently 55 degrees, rather pleasant outside. 64% humidity out at the airport, where they have west winds at 8 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for isolated showers this afternoon and cloudy skies. High near 58 with west winds to 15. And look for rain until about 1 a.m. tonight with showers after that. Cloudy skies overnight with a low around 47. West winds continuing about 10. And tomorrow, after a little scattered showers in the morning, partly sunny skies after that with a high near 63. West winds to 5, becoming completely calm tomorrow. And after a little mostly cloudiness overnight on Saturday, sunny skies on Sunday and mostly sunny on Monday. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 2:25 this afternoon and be 6.4 feet. Over on the west side, that will happen at 2:42 and be 11.5 feet in Larsen Bay. We have small craft advisories on both sides of the island offshore for Marbot Island to Sitka, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Saturday, west winds to 15, becoming west 25, south of Dangerous Cape in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, west 25, except west 15, north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 25, except variable 10, north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, look for West winds increasing to 25 knots, resulting in a small craft advisory through tomorrow. Seas to 5 feet today, building to 6 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, southwest 25, seas to 6 feet. The Federal Subsistence Board of the USDA has closed subsistence, they're announcing at least, subsistence fishing closure in Women's Bay all around the Buscan River. Not many red salmon have gone up the Buscan so far, so they're closing all sport and subsistence fishing pretty much anywhere near the Buscan. So please do not catch any fish who might be headed upriver at the Buscan. They've had precious few so far. The big Living with Bears around Kodiak Public Forum is happening this Saturday. That's happening at the Bayside Fire Hall from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Families are welcome to attend. There will be door prizes as well. And they'd like to know how you feel about bears around town. You can help shape the future of bear management in Kodiak because representatives from various agencies that have to deal with them in person will be there. And they want to hear from you. Again, that's at Bayside Fire Hall, Saturday, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Next Monday, there will be a Board of Education regular meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans, and meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. Look under the Board of Education tab. The meeting agenda and packet can be viewed on Board Docs as well. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. The monthly meeting of the KMXT Board of Directors will be happening Tuesday, June 20th, 6 p.m. at the KMXT building, which is up here at 620 Egan Way between the high school and the library. Look for the dish with the big octopus. The meeting is open to the public, and members are always encouraged to attend. For more information, call us here at the station at 907-486-3181, and the meeting will also be available via Zoom. Call or email gm@kmxt.org for your handy Zoom link. Upcoming Kodiak Pride events include the LGBTQ+ friendly restorative yoga class. That's happening next Wednesday, June 21st, at A Balanced Approach at 6:30 p.m. It's a fun LGBTQ+ friendly exercise class with donations for Kodiak Pride taken at the door. Things happening at the library include Thursday, June 15th's introduction of the preschool story time. That was yesterday, I guess. But from now on, every Thursday at 10:30 a.m., the preschool story time will be happening. And it's a captivating program for children ages 3 to 6 with animated storytelling, interactive reading, and imaginative play. And as a result, beginning June 16th today, Lapsit Storytime moved to Fridays at 10:30 a.m. So that's for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. They're sharing a story and some quality time to play and socialize as well. So they have two now, the one on Thursday at 10:30 for children ages 3 to 6, and one on Friday at 10:30 for babies 0 to 3. Also, don't forget the library's escape room is open for the summer. Daily time slots are available except for Mondays. Call now to check availability and reserve your spot. It's open to all ages, but kids under 14 must be accompanied by an adult, and they recommend groups of 4. Call the library at 907-486-8686 to reserve your spot. And don't forget the library showing A Little Mermaid. Oh, they already did. I'm sure that was fun. But tomorrow, join the library for an afternoon of various crafts. Crafternoon offers hands-on creativity and artistic expression. Unleash imagination through painting, collaging, and DIY activities, guided by skilled instructors. There will be all age groups at 1 p.m., followed by a group at 3 p.m. for ages 11 and older. Stop in or call the library at 486-8686 to sign up. But again, that's Saturday at the library, tomorrow, crafternoon, and all ages start at 1 p.m., followed by a group at 3 p.m. for ages 11 and older.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 5, date issued 10 a.m. on June 16th. There will be a 24-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Friday, June 16th until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 17th in the following areas. In the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Sunday, June 18th until 9 p.m. Tuesday, June 20th in the following areas. The Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Izhuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse hand gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus of Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus of Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 16th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. The big news this week is the closure of the Buskin River and its drainage to sport and subsistence fishing of sockeye salmon. This includes the waters from Gibson Cove over to Cliff Point. The closure starts at 12:01 a.m. Saturday morning, so Friday is your last day to fish the river. The good news is that sockeye fishing in Passagshack and Sultry should be picking up over the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, try your hand at a little king salmon fishing at the American, Olds, or Saloni Creek. Back here on terra firma, it continues to be downright chilly. But I have faith with the little sun, Kodiak's wildflower meadows will explode with color and green will soon cover the mountainsides. And everyone's allergies will kick in to overdrive, a small price to pay. Kodiak is known for its sweeping landscapes, beautiful and challenging seas, bountiful fish and wildlife, and the friendly, inventive, hardy people who live here. And of course, for the bears who have lived here for thousands of years, too. Bears and Living with Bears is the topic of a town forum at 5:30 Saturday evening at Bayside Fire Hall. It's a chance for us to learn about bears and to talk as a community about how we feel about living with bears in Kodiak. The agencies who deal with bear management want to hear from you. How do you feel about bears around town? What questions do you have? What ideas do you have about bear management? Who knows? You may have that great idea that will help guide Kodiak's bear management into the future. Hope to see you there. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Happy Father's Day. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.